time to catch up with the personalities behind the calculations in another episode of A Brief History of Mathematics. Professor Marcus de Sautoy argues that mathematics is the driving force behind modern science. Particle physicists today are able to predict the existence of new subatomic particles like quarks, charms and wimps, thanks to the mathematical insight of a brilliant young man who was killed in a duel in post-revolutionary Paris.
In the early hours of the 30th of May, 1832, a gunshot resounded across the fields in the 13th arrondissement in Paris. A peasant, on his way to market, heard the shot and ran towards the sound. He discovered a young man writhing around in agony, bleeding to death from a duelling wound. The young man's name was Évariste Galois, a well-known Republican in post-revolutionary Paris. A 20-year-old rebel who'd be remembered as one of the most original mathematicians of all time. Évariste Galois transformed our mathematical understanding of symmetry, and that mathematics has in turn transformed our understanding of the world of subatomic particles.
This mathematical approach that was established by Galois is holding up pretty well in particle physics today, frustratingly well as it happens. It's a remarkably good way of looking at and describing the universe.
This is the story of an angry young mathematician who struggled to get his ideas heard. A man whose massive mathematical insight drives one of the most exciting quests in science today. What's the universe made of?
A Brief History of Mathematics with Marcus de Sautoy.
When as a teenager Galois sat the baccalaureate, his literature examiner reported,
"He knows absolutely nothing. I was told that this student has an extraordinary capacity for mathematics. This astonishes me greatly, for after his examination, I believed him to have but little intelligence."
The mathematics examiner, however, recognised his brilliance, but also noted,
"This pupil is sometimes obscure in expressing his ideas."
A problem that was to plague Galois throughout his short career. Aged just 19, he sent a paper to Joseph Fourier, asking to be considered for the highly prestigious annual Grand Prix in mathematics. Joseph Fourier, star of a previous episode in this brief history of mathematics, was hand-picked by Napoleon to teach mathematics at the École Polytechnique. Now he was the secretary to the Academy of Science in Paris. He might have been sympathetic to Galois' application, but he died shortly after receiving the manuscript. And Galois wasn't even considered for the Grand Prix. He was furious.
"It is the men of science who are responsible for my manuscripts being lost in the fires of the Institut Français. I fail to understand such negligence."
He hurled abuse at members of the Paris Academy, desperate to get a response from them. A fellow mathematician, Sophie Germain, wrote to a colleague,
"He has been expelled from the École Normale. He is without money. He has kept up his capacity for being rude, a taste of which he gave you after your best lecture at the Academy. They say he will go completely mad, and I fear this is true."
A year later, Galois was attending a Republican feast to celebrate the acquittal of a group of rebel army officers. They'd been charged with conspiring to overthrow the French king, Louis-Philippe. The writer, Alexandre Dumas, was there.
"Suddenly, the name Louis-Philippe, followed by five or six whistles, caught my ear. I turned around. One of the most animated scenes was taking place 15 or 20 seats from me. A young man who had raised his glass and held an open dagger in the same hand was trying to make himself heard. He was Évariste Galois, a charming young man and one of the most ardent Republicans. The noise was such that the very reason for this noise had become incomprehensible. All I could perceive was that there was a threat and that the name of Louis-Philippe had been mentioned. The intention was made clear by the open knife."
3 days later, Galois was arrested. Despite his desire to be sacrificed for the Republican cause and be sent down as a martyr, his lawyer managed to get him off the charge of incitement and threatening the life of the king. A week later, he was arrested again, for wearing the band uniform of the National Guard and carrying weapons. This time, the courts were not so lenient. Galois was found guilty and sentenced to 9 months in prison. It was not so desolate as it might have been. Galois struck up a deep friendship with another revolutionary, François-Vincent Raspail, one of France's leading natural scientists. The other prisoners, however, were less respectful. Several times they challenged Galois to drinking matches, as Raspail reports.
To refuse the challenge would be an act of cowardice. And our poor Bacchus had so much courage in his frail body that he would give his life for the hundredth part of the smallest good deed. He grasps the little glass like Socrates courageously taking the hemlock. He swallows it at one gulp, not without blinking and making a wry face. A second glass is not harder to empty than the first, and then the third. The beginner loses his equilibrium. Triumph! Homage to the Bacchus of the jail! You have intoxicated an ingenious soul who holds wine in horror.
When Galois complained to the guards about ill treatment, he was thrown in solitary confinement. The other prisoners leapt to his defence.
Galois in the dungeon? Oh, the bastards! They have a grudge against our little scholar. This young Galois doesn't raise his voice, as you well know. He remains as cold as his mathematics when he talks to you.
Galois's main mathematical interest was how to solve equations. But the way he approached the solution to these equations was highly original. He analysed these equations using symmetry. He noticed that solutions to equations often have some underlying symmetry. For example, if x squared equals 4, then x is equal to 2. But there's another mirror solution to this equation, namely x equals minus 2. This idea is what marks Galois out as one of the most original thinkers in mathematics. And it's why he's one of my absolute mathematical heroes. The real challenge for Galois was how to understand symmetry. What he realised is this. Symmetry is something you do to shapes or structures, rather than a passive property of the thing itself.
Hiya, guys, what can we get you?
I'll have a pint of bitter, please.
No problem.
I've got a square beer mat here. I'm going to have to take my beer off the beer mat to do this. Now, to find out what symmetries it has, I'm going to draw an outline around the beer mat. Now, for Galois, the symmetries of this beer mat are the different ways I can pick it up and place it back down inside its outline. So, I could pick the beer mat up, rotate it by 90 degrees, and put it back down inside its outline. Or I could flip it over and reflect it in a line down the middle of the mat. And after a bit of experiment, you should find there are 8 different ways you can pick the beer mat up and put it back down inside its outline. So 8 different symmetries. But for Galois, it wasn't enough to identify individual symmetries, like a line of reflection or rotation. What was important was how these different symmetries interact with each other. It matters what order you do symmetry in, just as it matters what order you put your shoes and your socks on. Let's come back to the beer mat. It's got a face on the back of the beer mat. Now, if I rotate it through 90 degrees, then flip it over, that face is pointing towards the right. But if I flip it over first and then rotate it, the face is pointing the opposite direction. It was this observation that was part of Galois' great insight, although I'm not sure he did it down the pub.
Galois is remembered for his profound understanding of the nature of symmetry. By looking at how the symmetries of an object interact with each other, he was able to distinguish one symmetrical object from another. It's a massive leap forward in mathematical thinking. It's like the moment we understood the abstract idea of number. Three chairs are very different to three people, but the number three is common to both. Galois' work began a mathematical journey to classify or list every group of symmetries that might be possible, and the new symmetries that have been discovered as a result have proved to be enormously useful, not only for mathematicians, but also for scientists. In 1926, the Hungarian physicist Eugene Paul Wigner was grappling with quantum theory. When he couldn't get the maths to work, he asked his old friend, who was a mathematician, for some help. His friend suggested he use the mathematics of Galois. It was an inspired recommendation. In the weird and wonderful world of quantum mechanics, Galois' mathematics just kept on delivering answers. It not only accurately described countless subatomic particles, it's being used even now to predict the existence of new particles, particles that nobody has seen, but that the math says must be there. After World War II, anyone who was anyone in particle physics was using the mathematics that Galois had started. Particle accelerators like the Large Hadron Collider at CERN were designed on the strength of it. It's the lifeblood of particle physicists like Tara Shears.
When we try to describe the forces that hold matter together, so there's electromagnetism, there's the force that's responsible for radioactive decay, and there's another force as well that's responsible for keeping atomic nuclei together. They're very, very different. They look very, very different to us on Earth. They have very different consequences. But when we describe their actions using this particular approach that really brings out the symmetry and the similarity between things, the equations that we get are incredibly similar, and it's absolutely wonderful. And that's the gift of this particular line and language of mathematics. It's a remarkably good way of looking at and describing the universe.
Once you understand the mathematical rules of symmetry that govern it, the strange world of quantum mechanics starts to make sense. We now know the visible universe is made up of just 12 fundamental particles, held together by four fundamental forces. It's a stunning achievement, and in my view, one for which much of the credit is due to my mathematical hero, Évariste Galois. Shortly after Galois was released from prison, he finally received a response to the paper he'd submitted to the Academy. It was not entirely positive.
We have made every effort to comprehend Monsieur Galois's proof. His arguments are not sufficiently clear for us to judge their rigour. However, one should wait for the author to publish his work in entirety before forming a definite opinion.
But time was not on Galois's side. He'd been challenged to a duel, and it wasn't until the night before that duel that he set to work, filling in the details of his great breakthrough in a letter to a friend.
There are a few things left to be completed in this proof. I have not the time. In my life, I have often dared to advance propositions about which I was not sure, but all I have written down here has been clear in my head for over a year, and it would not be in my interest to leave myself open to the suspicion that I announce theorems of which I do not have complete proof. Make a public request of the mathematicians Jacobi or Gauss to give their opinions, not as to the truth, but as to the importance of these theorems. After that, I hope some men will find it profitable to sort out this mess. I embrace you with effusion, E. Galois.
At dawn the next morning, maybe a lack of sleep contributed to his bad aim, Galois was shot. Next day, in the arms of his brother, he pleaded,
"Do not cry. It takes all my courage to die at the age of 20.
But thanks to the letter he sent to his friend, his mathematics lives on. And to this day, it's helping to solve one of the biggest scientific questions there is. What is the universe made of?
A brief history of mathematics was presented by Professor Marcus de Sautoy. The producer was Anna Buckley. The readers were Alison Pettit, Inam Mirza, Julian Wadham and Samuel West.